Okay, welcome everybody to this particular Labor of Hercules for the Capricorn webinar. Like I said, those of you who haven't got your little mic on yet, you need to make sure you've got the mic and speakers checked. And then I'm going to pretty much keep you on mute most of the time because we've got real bad echoes with this particular kind of webinar. Unfortunately, you're not going to have, you know, a raise your hand, so I can't really see when you have a question. But if you just type in the little chat block there down here, that you have a question, I've got several people here helping me, and they'll alert me to the fact, and then I can unmute you individually. In the meantime, also please keep yourself muted. That way, when I open it up for questions, we won't have a lot of background noise or echoes. Okay, here's a little chat block where you can type your message. Again, it's like the changing from the microphone to the phone. If you don't see the actual place where you're going to type the message down here, then you probably have a little plus sign here at the chat, and you want to click the plus sign and it will open up the stuff underneath it for you. Okay? As I tell you every time, if you're having problems with echo and interference, mute yourself first to see if that helps correct the problem. And if not, please type a little chat to me or some of the folks I've got helping me, and we'll see what we can do to minimize the noise. Okay? I want to thank everybody for attending. We've got a nice crowd going here. You can ask questions at any time if you want, but I will also pause at certain points and ask you if you have a question. So let's get started. Again, why study the Hercules myth? We study it because by the labor, the lessons that Hercules goes through, all the zodiacal signs, it's as though God had a picture in space of his plan for the working out of the evolution of the human spirit. Each sign gives us, it confers attributes on us that help us learn and experience. And our job is to go through them over and over again and master them. But this, the labors of Hercules, even though it's about Hercules and he's a disciple, it isn't just limited to disciples. We all can better understand the lessons of each sign by reading what Hercules learns in them. Every single one of us has all 12 signs in their chart. Some of us have planets in others, in signs and not in others, but they're all there. And we have planets transiting them. We have planets that progress into them. So every single one of the signs is important to us. And Hercules points out the lesson that we can learn from each of them. Okay, I'm going to start again, and I'm sorry that you're going to have to listen to all of this again, but it's important that we get the recording down. The light of life must now shine forth within a world of dark, the great presiding one declared. The teacher understood. The Son of Man, who is also the Son of God, must pass through gate the tenth, he said. Within this very hour, Hercules shall venture forth. When Hercules stood face to face with him who was his guide, the latter spoke. 1,000 dangers you have braved, O Hercules, the teacher said, and much has been achieved. Wisdom and strength are yours. Will you make use of them to rescue one in agony, a prey to vast and unremitting suffering? The teacher gently touched the forehead of Hercules. Before the latter's inner eye, a vision rose. A man lay prone upon a rock and groaned as if his heart would break. His hands and legs were shackled. A vulture, fierce and bold, kept pecking at the prostrate victim's liver. The man uplifted his manacled hands and cried out for help, but his words echoed vainly in the desolation and were swallowed by the wind. The vision faded. Hercules stood, as before, at the side of his teacher. The shackled one whom you have seen is called Prometheus, the teacher said. For ages he has suffered thus, and yet he cannot die, being immortal. From heaven he stole the fire. For this he has been punished. The place of his abode is known as hell, the domain of Hades. Unto Prometheus, O Hercules, you are asked to be a savior. Go down into the depths, and there upon the outer plains release him from his suffering. Having heard and understood, the Son of Man, who was also a Son of God, embarked upon his quest and passed through Gate the 10th. Okay, there were three things that Hercules had to do before he descended into hell. First, he had to purify himself. Hercules, the Son of God, who had triumphed, had been transfigured, was going down into hell to work, and the word came to purify himself. He already thought he was pure, but no, there's a couple of things he still needed to work on. How he underwent this process of purification, we are not told, but it's probably by demonstrating freedom from irritability and selfishness in his own home environment. This purity means freedom from the limitations of matter. If imprisoned in any way, even by the mind, which is a form of subtle matter, then we are not pure. If there are any selfish emotions, then that is not pure. And Hercules had to rid himself of all these types of things. Then we read that he had to be initiated into the mysteries. Now, the author of this particular part of the book, Francis Merchant, he hypothesized that that meant that you go through your own personal hell before you can go into universal hell. You have a terrible time in your own life, and you are initiated as you undergo your own personal hell. You learn the nature of the universal by the individual experience, and this you cannot learn by hearsay. You must go through the trials and tribulations. As has happened before in the myths, Hercules then had to pause and perform an act of service before he could advance upon Cerberus. He saw two people who were bound and shackled, or who were being attacked by cattle, and he had to deliver them before he could meet his own problem. And that's because service always comes before the initiate. Letting go of what he has set himself to do in order to help others who need it. That is the story of the initiate, because it is based on a group consciousness, not an individual consciousness. So downward he traveled into the binding worlds of form. The atmosphere grew stifling, the darkness steadily more intense, and yet his will was firm. This steep descent was long and lonely, yet he wasn't totally alone. He heard the silvery voice of the wisdom goddess Athena and the strengthening words of Hermes. After a long time, he came to that dark, envenomed river called the Styx, a river that the souls of the deceased must cross. A penny had to be paid to Charon, the ferryman, so he could take people to the other side. Yet Hercules must have been so scary looking in his somber attitude, because he scared Charon so much that the ferryman forgot to ask for the fee, and he ferried him across anyway. And so Hercules entered Hades, hell, a dim and misty region where the shells of the dead flitted by. "What seek you, a living mortal, in my realms?" asked Hades. Hercules said, "I seek to free Prometheus." "The path is guarded by the monster Cerberus, a dog with three heads, each of which has serpents coiled around it." "If you can conquer him with your bare hands," Hades told him, "a feat no one has yet performed, you may unbind the suffering Prometheus." Satisfied with this response, Hercules proceeded. Soon he found the triple-headed dog and heard its piercing bark. Grasping the primary throat of Cerberus, Hercules held it in a vice-like grip. Goaded to frenzied fury, the monster thrashed about, at length its strength subsiding. Hercules had mastered it. This done, Hercules went on, found Prometheus on his stone slab in agonizing pain, and quickly Hercules broke the chains and set the sufferer free. Retracing his steps, he returned as he had come. Once again, he reached the world of living things and found his teacher there. "The light now shines within the world of dark," the teacher told him. "The labor is achieved. Rest now, my son." Now, I had a question here on the terminology. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Greek and Roman myths, but the Greeks had one name, the Romans had another name, but it's the same pantheon of gods, okay? In this particular myth, they are using the Greek names, but primarily what we see in the astrological significance we see is with the Roman names. So Hades is Greek for Pluto, the Roman version. He is considered the god of the underworld. And in this Greco-Roman mythology, we had the 12 Olympians, and each had their own domain. And in essence, that is what we see carried forward into astrology. Pluto is sometimes actually considered part of the Olympians in mythology, although technically he's not, because he didn't live on Mount Olympia. He lived in the underworld. But he is considered one of the 12 related gods that we know of in astrology. You know, so we had Zeus and Hera, which were Jupiter and Juno, and they were the king and queen of the heavens. And we have Poseidon, which is the Greek name, Neptune is the Roman name for the god of the seas, Aphrodite, who is also Venus, the goddess of love, Ares, who is Mars, the god of war, and Hermes, who is mentioned in this labor, was the messenger of the gods, also known as Mercury. Their mythological archetypes stick with us in the meaning of these planets as we interpret astrology. Hercules is the Roman version of the name, and the name that we most commonly use today. In fact, what? There's a new Hercules movie out, isn't there? And he was the son of Zeus by a mortal mother. Alcmene was the name of his mother. And hence his dual nature, the son of God and the son of man. His Greek name is actually Heracles, and that translates roughly as Hera's glory. He was actually named something else. I've got it written down somewhere, but don't have it right handy. Anyway, they changed his name to Heracles to try and pacify Hera, because Zeus, her dog of a husband, was out messing around, and she was not pleased with him. She was not pleased with the child. And so they were trying to mitigate her anger. Of course, this was just one of many liaisons that Zeus had, fathering a bunch of children with other women. But Hercules was a popular little child, and other gods and goddesses helped protect him from Hera, and also in the labors and stuff that he did. As we saw here, both Athena and Hermes were helping him out. Okay, To finish off the pantheon of the gods, I've mentioned several of them, but I didn't talk about Saturn. Saturn was a Titan. He's also known as Cronus, was a Titan, one of the earlier versions of the 12 gods. He wasn't an Olympian. He was actually the father of the Olympians. And Uranus was the father of the Titans, the 12 Titans. In each case, the children overthrew their father to gain control. Okay, I'm going to pause right here. Does anybody have any questions? Let me take everybody off mute. Does anybody have any questions before I go further?
Yes, ma'am. I had a question. Why Prometheus hold the
okay,
fire
hold it. This was Yvonne?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, let me mute everybody and then unmute you. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, this was a question that I sent you. Why was Prometheus being punished for stealing the fire from heaven? What does this mean?
Okay, the fire from heaven is the mind. Fire represents the mind, and that's what he stole. He stole the mind. That brought us into, out of the realm of the animals and into the realm of humanity and thinking, and he was being punished for that.
Why?
Because they felt it belonged to the gods and not to humanity.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see that question from you. I saw some of the others, but I didn't see that one, or I didn't understand that one. Sorry. Okay, any other questions? Oops. Any other questions before I move on?
Any other questions before I move on?
Okay. Again, if you have a question, type it in the little chat thing if I've missed anything. I am going to move on now to the next slide. Okay, as we learned earlier with Cancer, there are two gates of dominant importance. Cancer is the gate into what we call life. It's the gate into incarnation. And Capricorn is the gate into the spiritual kingdom. Capricorn is the gate through which we finally pass when we no longer identify ourselves with the form side of existence, but become instead identified with spirit. And this is what it means to be an initiate. An initiate is a person who is no longer placing his consciousness in his mind or his desires or his physical body, the three lower vehicles. He can use these if he chooses, and he does to help all humanity. But that is not where his consciousness is focused. It's focused in the soul, that aspect of ourself that is free from the form. That's the true aspect of who we are. What we also see in this myth is that there are two different areas of emphasis. First is the emphasis on the descent into hell to free humanity, in the figure of the tortured Prometheus here. And this is similar to when Jesus descended into hell, because he wanted, his love was all-inclusive, and it covered even the lost souls. The other area of emphasis deals with Cerberus. And in some versions of this myth, Hercules actually slayed him, and in others, he brought him up to earth. We're told that on his knees, that the Capricornian offers heart and life to the soul. And only then, when self-initiated, can he be trusted with the secrets of life and the higher powers. Now, the symbol of Cerberus, this three-headed dog, had snakes growing all over his body, snakes for a tail, and he was the guardian of Hades, of Pluto. The three heads symbolize sensation, desire, and good intentions. It is the love of sensation that drives humanity hither and thither, as it says, to satisfy hunger in the economic world or to satisfy desire for happiness in the world of pleasure. The violent impacts of sensation are sought to keep the mind occupied. The central head was grasped by Hercules first because it was the most important, since desire underlines all sensations. It is what desire seeks to express and so gain satisfaction in the outer world. The third head is good intentions that are not carried out. So you have desire in the center, and on one side you have sensation typifying all impacts, and on the other you have good intentions that have not been thought through, never performed. In other words, this is, you know, you've heard that phrase, hell is paved with good intentions. That's what this is talking about. The tail made of serpents typifies all illusion that impede the progress of spiritual life, the materiality that holds us down, the lower psychic nature that causes such destruction, fear along every possible line, the fear of failure, which holds so many back from activity and breeds only inertia. And Hercules grasped Cerberus by the central head and conquered him because all sun gods are occupied with the problems of humanity. And because desolate and alone, they go down to hell to save humanity. And hence, all sun gods are born in the sign of Capricorn. Okay, that's a little sound bite for that. Let me open it up again to see if we've got any questions before we move on. No questions? Okay, I'll move on. Was that you again, Yvonne?
Yeah, it's me again. What other sun gods are there? What are all the sun gods that are born under this sign of Capricorn?
Well,
I'm not sure what that means.
Jesus is one of them.
Okay.
Apollo. I'm not sure right now. Let me see. Francis, do you have any? Do you have a list of sun gods?
Am I muted? Okay. Basically, all the avatars at the level of, for instance, the Buddha, though we normally connect him with Taurus, would be considered a sun god, because having conquered the personality completely at fifth and sixth initiate level, they move to the rhythm, to the solar rhythm, rather than to the lunar rhythm, which makes them aligned with the sun and therefore a sun god. Specifically being born at the time of the sun is related to the fact that the sun turns northward, of course, at the solstice, you know, on December 21st, just as the sun itself is born back into light, at least in the northern hemisphere. And so are these sun gods. So going all the way back, you would have, you know, Krishna, and this one here, Hercules as well, would be going, whose Dwal Kul considers an historical figure. And there's many others. Mithras was a sun god of the Persian Empire. That's all I can think of offhand. But
yeah, Ra. I mean, you've got them in all different cultures.
Thank you.
Hermes.
Thank
you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bill, Melia has posted a question. She says, the road to hell may be paved with good intentions. However, isn't the motivation the way we would distinguish between good deeds and not so good deeds, between right and wrong?
Yes, it is, but, you know, we have to follow through with our good intentions. You know, yes, there is good deeds and not so good deeds. And of course, we always need to work on the side of the soul, which is the good deeds for the betterment of all of humanity, not selfish intent. But we also have to follow through with it. And that was the point I understood them to be making in this particular labor, was that we can have all the good intentions we want, but if we don't follow through with them, what good are they? Does that answer your question, Malia? Let me unmute you. Does that answer your question, Malia?
Yes, it does. Yeah, the difference between action and non-action. If you have a good intention but don't do anything, that's what we're talking about. But I'm thinking about the things that we do that don't turn out well. If we meant well by them, that isn't that more important than the fact that it didn't turn out well?
Yes, yes, you're right. You know, and we learn from experience, and we get the broader picture, I think, more often when they don't turn out well. And we have to analyze why they didn't turn out well. But yes, yes, you're right. It's about right thought, right speech, right action. But then it's also about it working, you know, us doing it and it working out well to help other people for the good of humanity and not for selfish motives. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay. Let me unmute everybody again just for a second and see if there's any other questions before I move on.
Unmuted.
Okay, I don't hear any, so I'm going to mute everybody again. And thank you very much, Francis, for expanding on the sun gods. Okay. Capricorn symbolizes the third initiation. Which is the first of the major initiations. Okay, more on that in a minute. In Matthew 17, we're told that Christ took three disciples, Peter, James, and John, up into the high mountain and was transfigured before them. Peter, a rock or foundation, is the symbol of the physical body. James, the deceiver, symbolized the emotional nature, the source of all glamour, and John symbolizes the mind. The name actually means the Lord has spoken. And there you have the symbolism of the three aspects of the personality that are transformed in Capricorn. The lower threefold vehicle. This is a sign of the goat. It is a superhuman sign, a universal and impersonal sign. All the labors of Hercules before this have been concerned with his own liberation. But now we enter into the three signs that have no relation to personal achievement. He is free. He is initiate, a world disciple. He has passed round and round the zodiac many times. He's learned all the lessons of the sign, spiraled up, and climbed the mountain of initiation. He has undergone transfiguration. He is perfectly free and so can work universally on labors that have no relation to himself whatsoever. He works as a superhuman in a human body. The great stages of development upon the path of expansion, which we call initiations, are recorded in the brain and cannot be told to you by someone else. The hallmark of an initiate is actually silence. Capricorn is a sad sign. It is a sign of intense suffering and loneliness, for those are also marks of an initiate. Impersonality is based on a fundamentally personality achievement. You must have been tremendously attached before you can know the meaning of impersonality. And this is a paradox, but there is no achievement in being impersonal if there is no temptation to be personal. The impersonality we must develop is an expansion of personal love that we have for an individual, our family, our circle of friends. And we expand that to the same attitude for all humanity. We can love all mankind without sentimentality because we know the meaning of personal love, and we must give the same love to everybody that we have given to the individuals close to us. Impersonality is not shutting yourself off, putting up walls. It is loving everyone because we are able to see people as they truly are, faults and all. In the Rules of the Road, it is written, each sees and knows the villainy of each, and yet there is, with the great revelation, no turning back and no spurning of each other. That is the condition to be obtained in Capricorn. The world disciple does not do only what Hercules did, go down into hell to conquer Cerberus, but also works among men at all times and is interested in his fellow man. Now, a little word of warning that they give us here in this particular labor. If you were born in the sign of Capricorn, please don't get the idea that you are an initiate. We should lay emphasis on a sense of proportion and the status of each person's evolution. There's a long process of evolution to be followed before we reach that stage. And aspirants either suffer from an inferiority complex, thinking that they're much lower than they are, and that it's not really possible for them to accomplish anything, or they have this exaggerated idea of their importance, that they have just a touch of soul consciousness that's really just a tiny touch, and they think it's the whole thing, and they become inflated. Neither of these show the right proportion. It is in soul consciousness that we eventually function in Capricorn, know ourselves to be initiates, and enter upon two great universal signs of service to humanity. In Aquarius, we are dealing symbolically with animals in bulk, since in that sign, Hercules has the job of cleaning out the Aegean stables, his first work as a world disciple. But it's in Pisces that he captures not the bull, but all of the oxen, carrying into our consciousness the idea of the universality of world work, of group consciousness, and of universal consciousness and universal service. Okay, let me unmute everybody again, see if there's any questions or comments before we move on. Nope, okay. Sorry if I'm going too fast. Like I said, if I you didn't have a chance, just type something in the little chat box. Okay, who is there? Sorry, we had a little echo there. Okay.
Okay.
I want to get rid of the echo here, so I just think I muted everybody. Okay. All right. Now's a good point. You know, usually what I do when I reach this point is I try and go into a little bit about what it says in esoteric astrology to add a little bit more to the particular labor. But this time I didn't do that. I went into initiation human and solar and the rays and the initiations because I wanted to talk a little bit about initiations and what initiations are. You know, Capricorn is all about being the initiate. So what does that really mean?
BL, before you go ahead, would you like to answer Maria Christina's question? She says, Hercules also rescues Prometheus in the labor of Gemini, one of the five labors performed in this third constellation of the zodiac. What might be the significance of this?
He rescued Prometheus in Gemini?
That's what Maria Cristina is saying here. Also rescues Prometheus in the labors of Gemini. One of the five labors performed in this third constellation of the zodiac. I'm not sure.
Okay. Maria, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to look that up. And what I'll do is I'll respond on, unless Francis has something to say, I'll respond on the...
Well, in this Labors of Hercules, as DK and Alice Bailey brought it forth, I'm looking at the Gemini labor now, and I don't see any reference in the actual labor to Prometheus, but there's a natural connection there through Mercury and the rulership of Mercury, because after all, the light that Prometheus brought was mercurial. It was the light associated with Hermes. In fact, this is a submyth that is a big part of this labor, which is that that Lucifer, which if you're of a Christian background and doesn't done any esoteric studies, is one with the devil, is in fact a great angel who, in a sense, volunteered to bring light to mankind, and he fell very much like BL's description or DK's or I should say the description in this labor of Hercules moving down through all the planes. He fell into generation, but he brought with him the potential of higher mind, of being able to link through the mind to the soul. That was his great gift to humanity, and it was the old gods, headed by Saturn and Poseidon, that older Greek pantheon that chose to punish him for this, but in fact, as personifying humanity, we're all being punished by living here in this place, which is, by the way, the hell that is described in this. It doesn't profit us that much to imagine Hercules is really going down into some imaginary Christian hell. This is plenty hell enough, this place of the lower quaternary, you know, where we're entrapped by the three heads of Cerberus, right? With the strongest being the nature, our desire nature. I have more to say, but I'm not going to right now. I'm just going to keep it at that. And in terms of answering Christina's question.
Okay, thank you. And I did, while you were talking, I looked it up. And what I find is that it's interesting that it's mentioned in both labors, but in the Gemini labor, which I'll read to you here in just a second, he actually doesn't have to go down into hell, but both of them are the three. You know, Gemini is the third sign, and when he does go down into hell in Capricorn, he is doing it, he is facing Cerberus, the three-headed dog. So there is a relationship there. And apparently it was important that he should rescue Prometheus several different times, because what it actually says in the Gemini labor is, chastened yet full of questioning belief, Hercules continued with his search and wandered far. The year spent prone upon the altar, this was when he was captured by the false teacher in Gemini. He had taught him much. He went with greater wisdom on his way. Suddenly he halted in his steps, a cry of deep distress mote on his ear. Some vulture circling o'er a distant rock caught his attention. Then again a cry broke forth. Should he proceed upon his way, or should he seek the one who seemed in need and thus retard his steps? He pondered on the problem of delay. A year had now been lost. He felt the need for haste. Again the cry broke forth, and Hercules, with rapid steps, sped to his brother's help. He found Prometheus chained upon a rock, suffering dire agonies of pain caused by the vultures plucking at his liver, thus slowly killing him. Now here they don't talk about Prometheus being immortal like he was down in hell. Hercules broke the binding chain and freed Prometheus, changing the vulture at their distant lair and tending the sick man until he had recovered from his wounds. Then, with much loss of time, he again started to make his way. So the myth is the same, both in the Gemini and in the Capricorn, where he frees Prometheus. He stops. He pauses from the mission that he's on to provide this service. But it is interesting that it's, that particular thing is listed in both labor. So thank you, Christina, for bringing that to our attention. Okay.
Are you there, Bill? Hello?
Uh-oh. Did I mute myself?
Where we lost your audio, sweetie.
Yeah. I muted myself. Thanks. Okay. So Capricorn tells us the story of climbing the mountain. You guys were able to hear me read that Gemini thing, right? Kay?
Yes.
You did hear the Gemini
thing,
right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
Sorry. I guess I'm losing my mind today. Okay. So, initiation. Capricorn tells the story of climbing the mountain and of the descent into hell. There are three great ascensions of every soul. Masonry, down the ages, has been a custodian of this tradition. First, there is the raising of matter into heaven. We find that in Virgo. Then there is the raising up of the psychic nature from below the diaphragm. You are no longer emotional and self-centered, living in the solar plexus, but are focused in the heart and conscious of the group. Your feelings and desires are related to the group. You no longer live in the animal nature, interested in creation on the physical plane, but you become a spiritual creature working in mental matter. You are no longer held by form, but have soul dealt with it, that you have raised it to the head consciousness, and from the head you control your throat, your heart, your solar plexus, and every part of your body. You do this not by centering on them, not by thinking about them, but by living as a conscious son of God, seated on the throne between the eyebrows, the Ajna center, or pituitary gland, as the Hindus name it. It is the second great ascension. And the final ascension is that which marks the emancipation of the initiate of a very high degree who becomes consciously a world server. But it is the second initiation, the raising up of the lower psychic nature on which we have to work so that every desire, mood, and every emotion is lifted up into the heaven. When we speak of initiation, of wisdom, of knowledge, or of the probationary path, what exactly do we mean? The word initiation means to make a beginning, or the entrance into something, like the entrance into the spiritual life, or into a fresh stage in that life. It is the first step and the succeeding steps upon the path of holiness. Literally, therefore, a man who has taken the first initiation is one who has taken the first step into the spiritual kingdom, having passed out of the definitely human kingdom into the superhuman. Just as he passed out of the animal kingdom into human individualization at the earlier stage, so he has entered upon the life of the spirit now, for the first time, has the right to be called a spiritual man in the technical significance of this word. He is entering upon the fifth and final stage in our present fivefold evolution. Having groped his way through the hall of ignorance during many, many ages, and having gone to school in the hall of learning, he is now entering the university, or the hall of wisdom. When he has passed through that school, he will graduate with his degree as a master of compassion. Knowledge is the product of the hall of learning. It might be termed the sum total of human discovery and experience, that which can be recognized by the five senses and be correlated, diagnosed, and defined by the use of the human intellect. It concerns all that deals with the building and developing of the form side of things. Wisdom is the product of the hall of wisdom. It has to do with the development of the life within the form, with the progress of the spirit through those ever-changing vehicles, and with the expansion of consciousness that succeed each other from life to life. It deals with the life side of evolution. Since it deals with the essence of things and not with the things themselves, it is the intuitive apprehension of truth apart from the reasoning faculty and the innate perception that can distinguish between the real and the unreal. For our purpose, which is to study somewhat this path of spiritualism and its various stages, we're going to describe it as the realization of the kingdom of God within. It's also the apprehension of the kingdom of God without. In other words, we're looking for this spark, this essence of all things around us. Perhaps it might be expressed as the foundation, as the gradual blending of the paths of the mystic and the occultist, the rearing of the temple of wisdom upon the foundation of knowledge. It is the science of the spirit. Knowledge is separative and objective, while wisdom is synthetic and subjective. Knowledge divides and wisdom unites. Now, understanding can be defined as the faculty of the thinker in time to appropriate knowledge as the foundation for wisdom, that which enables him to adapt the things of form to the life of spirit, and to take the flashes of inspiration that come to him from the hall of wisdom and link them to the facts of the hall of learning. Wisdom concerns the one self. Knowledge deals with the not self, while the understanding is the point of view of the soul or the thinker and his relation between them. In the hall of ignorance, the form controls. The material side of things has the predominance. Man is therein polarized in the personality or his lower self. In the hall of learning, the higher self or the soul strives to dominate that form until gradually a point of equilibrium is reached where the man is controlled entirely by neither. Later, the soul controls more and more until the hall of wisdom, where it dominates the three lower worlds in increasing degree inherent in the divinity of mastery. I know this is very difficult to understand. It's described in two books that are quite hefty books. If you have a chance to read either of them, they're excellent books. but I just wanted to bring some of these concepts to you. Initiation, or the process of undergoing an expansion of consciousness, is part of the normal process of evolutionary development, viewed on a large scale and not from the standpoint of the individual. It is the nature of that experience where a student realizes suddenly that he has mastered a lesson and that the rationale of a subject and the method of procedure are his to use intelligently. These moments of intelligent apprehension follow the evolving monad through his long pilgrimage. This is the spirit incarnating over and over and over again, slowly but surely recognizing that he is that monad. What has been misinterpreted somewhat at this stage of comprehension is the fact that at various periods the emphasis is laid on different grades of expansion, and always the hierarchy endeavors to bring the race to a point where its units will have some idea of the next step to be taken. We're never finished. There's always a higher step. And we not only want to know where we've been, what we've just achieved, but where we're going next. Each initiation marks the passing of the pupil in the Hall of Wisdom into a higher class, marks the clearer shining forth of the inner fire, and the transition from one point of polarization to another, entails the realization of an increasing unity with all that lives and the essential oneness of self with all selves. It results in a horizon that continuously enlarges until it includes the sphere of creation. It is a growing capacity to see and hear on all planes. It is an increased consciousness of God's plan for the world, an increased ability to enter into those plans and to further them. Initiation leads to the mount where vision can be had, a vision of the eternal now, wherein past, present, and future exist as one. A vision of the pageant of the races within the golden thread of pedigree that is carried through many types. A vision of the golden sphere where holds in unison all the many evolutions of our system, Deva, human, animal, vegetable, mineral, and element, and through which the pulsating life can be clearly seen beating in regular rhythm. We are told over and over again that we're part of the entity that we know of as God, that we know of as the planetary logos, that we know of as the solar logos, and that's what these initiations show us in greater understanding. The first initiation might be regarded as the goal and the reward of the mystical experience. It is fundamentally not an occult experience in the true sense of the term, for it is seldom accurately realized or consciously prepared for, as is the case with the later initiations. And this is why the first two initiations are not actually considered major initiations. The third initiation is the first major initiation. In the mystical realization, there is normally an emphasis upon dualism. But in this new era of enfoldment, unity is achieved and dualism disappears. Students should therefore have in mind the following definite occult concept. The mystical way leads to the first initiation. Having achieved its purpose, it is then renounced, and the lighted way of occultism is then followed, leading to the lighted areas of the higher states of consciousness. Thus, both ways are seen to be essential. The mystical way is for the majority at this time, and is increasingly large number of mystics will emerge out of the modern masses of men. Paralleling this, the occult way is attracting more and more of the world's intelligence population. The new man who has come to birth at the first initiation must and will tread the occult or scientific way, inevitably leading him out of the world of mysticism into scientific perception of God as life and energy. The first initiation marks the beginning of a totally new life and a mode of living. It marks the commencement of a new manner of thinking and of conscious perception. It leads to much pain and suffering until the definite choice is made. A new dedication to service is vouchsafed, and the initiate is ready to undergo the baptism initiation. The first one. I'm sorry, the second one. Members of the new group of world servers should watch with care for those who show signs of having passed through the birth experience and should help them toward a greater maturity. They should assume that all those who truly love their fellow men and who are interested in esoteric teaching and who seek to discipline themselves in order to gain greater beauty of life are initiate and have undergone the first initiation. When they discover those who are seeking mental polarization and who evidence a desire and aspiration to think and to know, coupled with distinguishing mark of those who have taken the first initiation, they can, in all probability, safely assume that such people have taken the second initiation or on the verge of doing so. Their duty will then be clear. It is by this close observation on the part of the world server that the ranks of the new groups are filled. Today, the opportunity and the stimulation are so great that all servers must keep alert, developing in themselves the ability to register the quality for which search must be made, and giving the help and the guidance which will weld into one cooperative band those disciples and initiates who should prepare for the way of the Christ. So here again, this is all talking about service. This is why Hercules had to pause multiple times in multiple layers to help other people before he could finish his own labor. The reorientation with which he is now faced has to be brought about primarily upon the astral plane, because that has been for untold eons the level of his major polarization and the sphere of activity and the state of consciousness which has dominated him. He discovers that he lives in chaos of emotional reaction and conditioning glamours. He slowly begins to realize that in order to take the second initiation, he must demonstrate emotional control. I might emphasize that as yet no initiate demonstrates complete control during the intermediate period between any initiation and the next higher. The intermediate period is regarded as a cycle of perfecting. That which is being left behind and subordinated to the higher realization is slowly dominated by energies which are to be released into the consciousness of the initiate at the initiation for which he is being prepared. The interim period is always one of great difficulty. The energies being registered, made active, and finally used are steadily increasing in number and potency at each initiation. These impacts upon the rays of the soul and the personality rays of the initiate and on the subsidiary vehicles through which he works in the three worlds. He also becomes involved in the difficulties and the problems of the group and of the totality of groups that we call humanity. Okay, I'm going to pause here. I'm not quite finished with the stuff on the initiation, but I'm going to pause here to see if there's any questions. Okay, let me unmute everybody. I'm only discussing here the first three initiations, really. I'm not getting into all the rest of them, and I'm not really going into a lot of detail because we don't have the time to spend on it. That's a whole nother series of 12 or even more webinars all on their own. But here, let's see. Any questions so far?
BL, it's Malia.
Okay, hold it just a minute, Malia.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, that the material you just gave us on the way to distinguish someone who has done the first initiation and needs support from others to get into the occult way, where is that material found?
That was in Raise in Initiation, Section 2, pages 566 to 589.
Okay, so it's in that. That's the reference you've given on the sheet there.
Right, right. The Hall of Ignorance, Hall of Learning, Hall of Wisdom, that mm-hmm. portion of it came from Initiation Human and Solar. Yeah. The expansion of consciousness and the specific information on the initiations came from Raise in Initiations.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions before I go on and finish this slide?
Any other questions before I go on and finish this slide?
Okay, I'm going to try and wrap this up pretty quickly. I know I'm way over time. Sorry about that. Okay, only the first two initiations, which are implemented by the Christ and which are under the supervision, the supervisory probation of the spiritual hierarchy, are as yet possible to humanity, the bulk of humanity. The initiation of the transfiguration, the third one, is not yet for the mass of men. Doesn't mean men aren't taking it. They are, but not the majority of humanity, not the mass. The first two initiations, regarded simply as initiations of the threshold, are experiences which have prepared the body of the initiate for reception of the terrific voltage of the third initiation. This voltage is passed through the body of the initiate under the direction of the planetary logos. Before it was the Christ who was wielding the rod. Now it's the planetary logos. The rod of initiation is used as the transferring agent. The second initiation freed the initiate from the astral level of consciousness, the astral plane, the plane of glamour and illusion and distortion. This was an essential experience because the initiate, standing before the one initiator for the first time at the third initiation, must be freed from any magnetic or attractive pull emanating from the personality. The mechanism of the personality must be so purified and so insensitive to the material attractions of the three worlds that there is henceforth nothing in the initiate which could offset the divine initiatory activity. The physical appetites are subdued and relegated to their rightful place. The desire nature is controlled and purified. The mind is responsive primarily to ideas, intuitions, and impulses coming from the soul and begins its true task as an interpreter of divine truth and a transmitter of ashramic intention. As all disciples have to be focused on the mental plane and must operate from that level of consciousness at the third initiation, the understanding of this type of consciousness is one of major importance. Disciples and initiates must use the mind, and so their polarization must be mental. This third initiation is, as we've said, the first initiation from the angle of the hierarchy. It is the one in which the spiritual man demonstrates his complete control of the personality, the integrated personality. The physical body has been controlled through the medium of the physical disciplines. The emotional nature has been reorganized and made receptive to spiritual impression coming from the plane of pure reason, which is the Buddhic plane, and through the transforming process of the mind, the fifth principle. In this connection, the mind has acted as the organizer of astral reaction and a dispeller of glamour. The disciple is now focused in his everyday consciousness upon the mental plane. It is of value for students to consider that these three activities of the mind, the transmuting agent in the first case is the lower or concrete mind. The transforming agent is the soul, the son of mind, while the transfiguring agent is the spiritual triad working through the higher or the abstract mind. When this work is concluded, you have the initiation of the third degree made possible. Okay, let me move on quickly to the next slide. That was my quick down dirty on initiations. A recap of what Capricorn is. DK tells us it's one of the most difficult signs about which to write and is the most mysterious of all the 12, that even the symbol of the sign has never been correctly drawn, and we are told because of its correct delineation would actually produce an inflow of forces that would be undesirable. Some say it's actually symbolizes the signature of God. So at the foot of the mountain, the goat, the materialist, seeks for nourishment in arid places. The scapegoat, on the way up, finds the flowers of attained desire, each with its own thorn and delusionment. At the top of the mountain, the sacred goat sees the vision and the initiate appears. In other writings, they're symbolized as the goat, the crocodile, and the unicorn. The great swing in Capricorn is epitomized by the key words, upon the ordinary wheel, and the word said, let ambition rule and the door stand wide. This is the key to the evolutionary urge and the secret of rebirth. When a true sense of reality supersedes both earthly and spiritual ambition, the man can say with truth, lost am I in light supernal, yet on that light I turn my back. Okay, so here we go. It's an earth sign along with Taurus and Virgo. Extreme characteristics, ambition, crystallization, struggle overcome, then transfiguration, initiate consciousness, the unicorn of God. Its polar opposite is Cancer, a water sign. Its rulers, both exoteric and esoteric, are Saturn. And we've gone through the keywords here. Earth signs are practical, stable, dependable, but they may be too cautious. The keys are desire and material expression. Taurus is desire for experience, satisfaction, and knowledge. Virgo, desire for expression and spiritual desire. Capricorn, desire for liberation and service to others. Earth signs are feminine, as are water signs. Passive, receptive, yin energy. They represent the night and are related mostly to the 2, 4, and 6 ray line, although Capricorn actually expresses on the 1, 3, 7 line. They are compatible with water signs. Water and earth signs work out their relationships via the axis and also trines and sextiles, which are favorable aspects. It's a cardinal sign. Exoterically, they're forceful, initiating, but may lack follow-through. They work out their issues via oppositions and squares. They can be esoterically soul-directed, controlled activity, Capricorn developing spiritual awareness that leads to initiation, the synthesized axis of the cardinal signs, Aries and Libra is establishing balance and mental control, and then soul control over the personality, Cancer Capricorn is honing and nurturing the sensitivity and the intuition of the soul in preparation for the initiation, where the head and heart meet and the soul controls. We've gone through the progress of 10 of the signs so far. We are now in the 4 signs of achievement, scaling the mount of initiation in Capricorn. Okay, I'm going to open it up again. Thank you all for participating. If you have any other questions, you can send them to me. There's my email address. We will post this on Macara. Brett will do that for us. And I will also post the slides. I'll have a PDF version of the slides, so you will be able to look back at that. So, any questions or comments before we...
Any questions or comments before we
close everything out?
Thank you, BL.
You're welcome. Thank you, everybody, for participating. We had a really good showing. And again, I am so sorry for the snafu that happened there at the beginning. I appreciate you sticking it out with me. Okay, well, I'm going to stop everything then, and thank you all. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.